Now, each Wednesday, we feature a segment on the local peace community. Today, we are joined by Christine Ahn, who will be speaking this Saturday, February 10th, at a Women Against War event at the First Unitarian Universalist Society in Albany, 405 Washington Avenue. Christine organized a 2015 Women's March across the Korean demilitarized zone. So welcome, Christine.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Okay, so why don't we just start off about some maybe some background information on the Women Cross the DMZ.
Well, in 2015, on the 70th anniversary of Korea's division by Cold War powers that included the U.S. and the former Soviet Union, women felt that we needed to draw attention to the unresolved conflict that was still raging on the Korean Peninsula. The DMZ, as you may know, is the world's most fortified border. Thousands of troops, face off each other. And there's about 1.2 million landmines in that 2-mile DMZ area. And, we felt that there are these other costs and faces of the unresolved Korean conflict, whether it's the division of families, millions of Korean families still remain divided, whether it's the massive militarization and arms race on the Korean Peninsula and in Northeast Asia, and obviously, as we all know now, the threat of war between the United States and North Korea. And so we organized this historic crossing. We organized two women's peace symposiums, one in Pyongyang and one in Seoul in South Korea, and 30 women peacemakers from 15 countries, many from the countries that participated in the Korean War. We marched together with 10,000 Korean women, both in North Korea and South Korea, but only the international women were able to cross the demilitarized zone because the irony is that Korean women are not allowed to cross, but international foreigners are. So we did that calling for peace, calling for a formal resolution of the Korean War with a peace treaty and the reunion of families and women's leadership in the peace-building process.
Thanks, Christine. I'm curious, how did you get the permission to organize that march from the respective North and South Korean authorities?
It took a lot of fancy footwork and politicking, and we first went to the North Koreans in 2013, I believe. There were five New Zealanders who were on a on their motorbikes, and they wanted to cross the demilitarized zone. And so we learned from them because they were able to cross, and we asked them for their blueprint. And, obviously the hardest place to get a yes from is North Korea. And so in 2014, I went to North Korea with a colleague of mine, and we made the case that it was important on the 70th anniversary to do something that, drew the world's attention to the tragedy of the Korean conflict. As your listeners may know, Korea was it's like thousands of years old as a, one independent territory. And in 1910, Japan colonized the Korean people. And for 35 years, Koreans and Korea was under Japanese colonial occupation. And at the end of World War II, when Japan was defeated by the U.S. and the former Soviet Union, the two Cold War powers, it was really the United States, two State Department officials, tore a page from the National Geographic and drew a line across the 38th parallel. And that is essentially how Korea was divided. And 70 years later, Korea still remains divided. And this is the anniversary of the creation of two separate states. We went to North Korea. We got North Korea to agree to allow us to cross the DMZ. And at that time, the president in South Korea was a very hardline hawk named Park Geun-hye, who was later impeached and basically overthrown by a democratic uprising. Now Moon Jae-in is in power, who rode the wave of the Candlelight Revolution. And he has, you know, been calling for engagement. He has, you know, he extended an olive branch to North Korea. North Korea extended an olive branch back. And so, as you know, with the Olympics starting this Friday, the two Koreas will march together under a one Korea flag in the opening ceremony in Pyeongchang, South Korea. So, but just to go back to the approval, we actually, most Americans don't realize this, but it's not just getting approval from North Korea and South Korea. It actually also entails getting approval from the U.S. military, because the U.S. forces in Korea is the military, you know, they have wartime operational control over South Korea. So we had to also get approval from the U.S. And so we hope to do this year. And obviously, it's a completely different scenario than in 2015.
So, as you might guess, most people are totally ignorant in the United States about the situation in Korea. So maybe you just talk a little about, you know, what is the, you know, sort of Korean perspective on the issue of unification, and, you know, and how, say, even in South Korea, do they view this, you know, tit-tat conflict going on between, you know, North Korea and particularly President Trump?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I would say that especially as Koreans on the peninsula and in the diaspora see the two Koreas march together in the opening ceremony carrying a one Korea flag, that it will be deeply emotional, whether you're conservative or you're progressive. You know, there is a deep sense of injustice and tragedy for the Korean people. You know, why was a colony of Japan that had been, you know, the people had been, you know, organizing for decades for its liberation and, you know, wanted and viewed the United States to be an ally in helping its liberation, you know, ultimately become part of the occupying force. I mean, we still have 30,000 troops in South Korea across 80 U.S. bases. And so, you know, the reunification, I think a lot of South Koreans, especially the younger generation who, you know, really grew up in the 1997 IMF crisis, you know, so they saw their parents lose their jobs, lose all of their pensions, like grow up in, you know, tremendous insecurity. And then, you know, followed by 10 years of pretty hardline right-wing rule, you know, where they cut off a lot of public services. They signed the free trade agreement with the United States. So, you know, a lot of the sentiment in South Korea is, yes, they do want reunification one day, but let's take it slowly because, you know, they do see the model of Germany and how West absorbed East Germany and, you know, just created a huge setback in terms of the quality of life for people living in West Germany. The North Koreans, I mean, in my multiple trips to North Korea, it is a deeply emotional issue. And, you know, it's so hard to really discern what it is, you know. But obviously, I think it's very much the kind of political history and the kind of political orientation that they're taught, the political propaganda posters all around the country. And so I do think, I mean, you know, you see polls after polls where, you know, since Moon Jae-in came into power last May, you know, 8 out of 10 South Koreans do want inter-Korean reconciliation. And, you know, most people, I mean, I think like 70% of South Koreans are very happy with Moon Jae-in inviting the North Koreans and that they will march together under one Korea flag. But it is complicated, and especially given that the United States and under the Trump administration has not been very supportive of these talks, you know, and we see a lot of pundits, especially in CNN and in, you know, corporate media saying, oh, it's North Korea that's driving a wedge between South Korea and the United States. Well, I would say that the wedge that is being driven is by the hardline hawks, you know, that is calling for a bloody nose preemptive strike on North Korea. We know from Congressional Research Service, they you know, released a report last October, and they said that in the opening days of a conventional military conflict, this does not even include nuclear weapons. And we know North Korea possesses at least 20 nuclear weapons in their arsenal, that in the opening days, up to 300,000 people would be killed. And, you know,
Christine,
why would we
have to jump in here. We only have 2 minutes left. You're going to be speaking this Saturday, February 10th, at the First Unitarian Society in Albany, 405 Washington Avenue. Can you give people a brief overview of, you know, what that talk will be about and why they should attend?
I think it's urgent because the Trump administration is drawing up plans to wage a preemptive strike on North Korea. And I think we have to take that seriously. And so there is some bright lights and hope right now, but it's going to take all of us being educated and starting to get mobilized. We don't want another Iraq. We know that if there was a U.S. first strike on North Korea, it would entail up to 600,000 ground troops for an invasion. I don't think the American people want to do that. And so we all, ordinary people, grassroots people, we need to get educated and mobilized so that we can stop the U.S. from waging a first strike on North Korea.
Well, Christine, we want to thank you for joining us. Understand your website's at www.womencrossdmz.org, and hope you'll have an enjoyable trip to Albany.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.